Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hey, everybody.
And we've been on a two-week hiatus. Last week was the 4th of July, and I don't know about the rest of you, and I don't know about you, Christine, but I was busy taking a four-day weekend starting Wednesday night of last week. So we didn't record a show last week. But did you have a good four-day weekend?
I did. I actually started it on Tuesday night with seeing one of the last showings of Love at the Mirage, the shirt show there, because the Mirage is closing this month, if you don't know that, in Las Vegas. And then I spent a lot of it indoors because it was 110 to 120 degrees. So not much outdoor activity.
At least you spent it indoors with your hands the hell away from the keyboard.
I did. I didn't even check email for 4 days.
Good. That's good, and that's important, and really, 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 really important to do. And oh my God, am I glad I had a 4-day digital detox.
Same here. I need it because you and I both know, we get pulled from 20 different directions all day, and then we often work in the evenings too. So.
Well, you know, the hard thing about the detox for me, at any rate, was it coincided with Google catching up to itself. Google Search Console was down starting, what was it, the 29th of or 30th of, or the first, I should just say, of July. Then it wasn't recording data properly, so you know that leaves everyone on pins and needles, and then we all go on vacation for 4 days and suddenly it catches up to itself. Hard part for me.
What's that? Waiting for it to catch up to itself?
Well, knowing that it was catching up to itself. I mean, like, on the Friday, I guess the 5th, I mean, it was an entire detox. I did pay attention to a little bit of stuff, and I wasn't really paying attention. I learned that Google was starting to catch up with itself again, and I was desperate to see data, but I refused to look at Search Console. So
it was funny because I would see on Twitter that it was like updates from people. I think the longest I saw was 145 hours. No,
it didn't make it that far. I don't think it made it triple digits.
But for somebody, it did. They had 145 hours posted.
Staggering. It did start coming down. That was the part I enjoyed seeing. It went from like 90 some odd down to 40 some odd, down to 30 some odd hours, and then suddenly it was in the 16 hours, and then now we're back into like almost normal territory. I don't know. Nobody said anything. Google hasn't said a lot about the restoration of the data and what happened. They certainly haven't explained how it happened. I think some data was lost, but that could just be because I really was hoping to see better click results.
You know, there's a conspiracy theory that it had something to do with shutting down GA analytics, UA analytics.
I would subscribe to that theory myself. Like, yeah, that's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Literally at the same time as when it happened. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's possibly.
Coincidence is not causation. But
place to start looking, though.
Yeah, where there's smoke, there's probably fire.
Yeah.
Okay, so Google's caught up with itself. We should probably jump into our news stories. The biggest one that probably has the biggest impact is AI bubble. But while we're on the subject of Google, this could even lead into the AI bubble. Google had a craptastic second quarter. They did well financially. Like, that's not what I'm getting
at. Yeah, they're always messing with the ads to be able to do that. So,
well, even if they did mess with the ads, they made billions of dollars. They made lots and lots and lots of. They made so much money that they could be a small nation state. They made so much money. But they had what had to be. I mean, some small nation states have PR months that were as bad as Google's, but not many. It was a really, really, really bad,
was.
bad 3 months of it, and especially the month of May.
Yes.
So Google has pulled back on the number of generative AI overview results being shown in Google search. It had been showing, I think it was supposed to be 80, 85% of search queries were seeing some form of AI overview result set in May when they made that AI everything announcement. And now it's scaled back to what, like 30%, lower than 30%?
Oh, so it depends on who. So Kevin Endig did his own personal study, and then Search Engine Land also has a study. Search Engine Land says it only shows for 7% of queries, and that's overall. There could be, areas or sectors that have higher views. I do say I don't see them much anymore. Also, very strangely, just to add on to this, my search results in a good way are super clean lately. Like it's almost like I'm clicking that web button that gets rid of everything, but I don't. So they're definitely testing a cleaner palette. But yeah, the AI overviews have dropped tremendously. So according to Search Engine Land, and education queries, 26% to 13%, entertainment queries from 14% to almost zero, e-commerce from 26% to 9%. And then Kevin Endig did his own studies on like 1,600 of them. And I don't think he found it quite as low, but he said two-thirds are showing fewer AIOs. For those who don't know, that's the AI overview, and more citations in the overview. So they're showing more links in the overview. I could probably, for my perspective, this is just my perspective, the cost of running this is just astronomical, even with Google's modified ways and being able to bring the cost down. Energy consumption is really high. And then it's wrong a lot of the time. And we know that they had a disastrous rollout with the AIOs, with so many of them saying silly things like eat rocks and drink your urine for kidney disease. So I think that that combination of things probably has led to this, but we don't know that because they haven't released any information. But seems like a logical conclusion.
Well, I mean, the one question that you immediately jump to is if Google is showing more citations in the limited number of AI overviews that it is showing for various search results, where are they drawing the citations from, and how accurate are they? And if they can draw the citations and display them as a little citation number, why can't they display them as a clear blue link? I mean,
Yeah,
so many questions I could answer open by this.
there are. And also, Google's been shoving so much stuff into search, but just general comments I see, not from SEOs. Are people just tired of having so much stuff shoved into search? So it could be they're just exploring making a palette that doesn't have as much, stuff jammed into it, but that they added extra citations in the AIOs to help protect them legally. So that they have like, oh, well, you could have looked at all these citations if you didn't do that. Oh, well. They don't say to eat
So,
rocks
I
and
mean,
drink urine.
well, you don't have to eat the rocks. I mean, you could have done
Exactly.
what number seven said to do, right?
Yeah. And personally, on a personal feeling, I skip the AI overviews because we don't know if they're accurate. I don't know if it's saying what's supposed to be real or not. I skip straight to the what's below it. Usually, a lot of times now they add a featured snippet back. And the featured snippets were actually much better, in my personal opinion, to the AI overviews, because it gave me enough information that if I was looking for something real quick, it was there. And if I wanted more, I just clicked a link and I go to the website. So instead of trying to determine, because a lot of times in the AI overviews, I don't know if you noticed, but somebody wrote about it this week, I forget who. And it's like it gives you like multiple answers that all contradict each other. So it'll be like, sure, drink urine for your kidneys. Well, maybe you shouldn't drink urine for your kidneys. No, you should not drink urine for your kidneys, right? So it's like I didn't really have that one. I'm just making that one up. But it's like they all contradict each other so that they cover all aspects of the potential arguments. So it's not helpful. It's like, which one of these is right? I don't know. Which one of these should I look at? I don't know. And you don't have a link right there, so I can just simply go look at where it was taken from. So I just like having the feature snippet. I can go to the page. I can determine if I think the information is accurate. So, I don't know what you think. I don't know if you're getting that where you're at. So,
Well, my not a lawyer friend over at Reddit tells me that if you are going to be drinking urine for your kidney disorder, you got to consult a bartender first.
Well, of course, they at least make it palatable.
Well, sure. I mean, that's how it is. And a number of people, analysts, reporters, people in the tech community are beginning to even question the stability or long-term viability of the LLM, of large language models, given the cost and difficulty in getting a verifiable straight answer that you can not only take to the bank, but base your health on out of them. After all, the amount of money, the staggering cost of investment, of training, and then of actually just running the large language model. Where's the beef? Where's the profit here?
There may not be. So there've been some warnings came out in the last couple of weeks. One is Goldman Sachs, a couple other of the big investment houses. If you look at, you and I did a report on it a couple of weeks, maybe a couple months ago even, where it was like they spent 600, how much did they spend? Like 600 billion, 500 billion on hardware, but they got back like 5 billion. It
Or
was
so,
like
yeah.
something insane.
But these
So
are investments. I mean, you got to think of them as huge long-term investments.
but investments have to reduce their cost over time, right? So I invest in a big nuclear power plant to provide energy. If it's going to become profitable over time, it has to cost me less to run, right? Now, we don't necessarily need nuclear power plants to be profitable because they're usually run by the government. But in this case, AI industry, according to an article by Tom's Hardware, it's interesting. Tom's Hardware just used to be like this hardware review site, and is now like this big tech site, which is kind of cool. And it needs to earn, they need to earn $600 billion per year to pay for the hardware spend alone. So Sequoia put out this report, an analyst said it. So, and it's also the costs are going up, not down. So in Q4 2023, the AI revenue required for payback was about $200 billion, according to the Sequoia report, but now it's $600 billion. So, and then you add in the power costs and the money needed to run these things, the power resources and the money to run the centers, and how NVIDIA's chips keep getting more expensive and they cost you more to run. And then you add all that together with the fact that it can't be accurate and it's getting worse. There's a report that came out this week about ChatGPT. Now, this could all change with ChatGPT 5, but like even in the area of writing code, which it's usually pretty good at, the accuracy is declined on complex problems down to 40%. So, and then I read some other articles this past week. These are from academics and researchers I follow, so these aren't things that you've read for the today. But they're talking about that the RAG model, which is when it looks at other articles and tries to pull from that, so it kind of gets accurate information. They're not working either. So the RAG model is not working. Fine-tuning isn't working. Yeah, it works okay, but it's decreasing in its ability to even help correct things. So the problem is that everything that they thought would come out of this hasn't come out of it. All the positives, like leading to AGI, it can't lead to AGI, the inaccuracy issues, but none of them are getting better. They're getting worse. The costs are increasing. And the use cases that you can use something that's unreliable like this are smaller and smaller. So, when it first came out, Tom Altman declared, and so did his CFO, that they were going to take over every job in the world. But now it's like Microsoft was trying to develop AI that would take over all the coding jobs. But now we know the coding can't even be done to a 40% accuracy on a complex problem. So there's a lot of problems with the fact that it's just a flawed model, and there are a lot of people who hyped it in the beginning, and it's not holding up to the hype, and it's deteriorating. It's getting worse. And they're not able to so far to solve those problems. Now, if there's a big breakthrough, which it could be, and how the power, how much power it takes, or how many chips it takes, or all that stuff, it could totally change. But right now, the big investment firms are telling people there's an AI bubble in play, and there's a very good possibility it could pop.
The thing that's most annoying about this, that really hurts my brain the most, is I don't think the problem is in the tool. I mean, there's obvious flaws with the tool if you want it to be something beyond an extraordinary calculator, which it is. It's an incredible calculator. It should tell you, it should with incredible accuracy tell you the next thing that comes in the sequence. Have you ever done those IQ tests or those Mensa games where you have to identify the next object in a C in
Yes,
a
I was given
sometimes
many as a child.
sometimes they're really hard for people to spot the spatial patterns and stuff. This is exactly what AI was made for, because it should tell you 999999999 times out of whatever integer comes after that the exact right answer, because that's what it was made for. But if it starts using language is different than language has like a gajillion different patterns of its own, and there's nuance to language that goes beyond statistical probability. And eventually, no matter how accurate it is, it's going to get something wrong. 999 times out of 1,000, it's right. That one time out of 1,000, it's wrong. Now, thinking at scale, if it does a million computations a day, there's hundreds and hundreds of there's hundreds of opportunities for it to be wrong.
Yeah, and it's not even close to that accurate. That's the other problem too, right? The code, it's
Well,
40%, but language, it's about
the problem is
90%.
it starts training on itself. That's
That's
where we
true. That's part of the problem.
really
Yeah.
get into trouble, because you have things known to be inaccurate. I mean, there's lots of inaccurate information out there from before AI, but this is stuff that we know is tending towards inaccuracy, and we're putting and it's being mixed in with the great corpus of knowledge.
And there's no accountability. There's no one to go to and say, this was inaccurate. Can you fix it? It can't be
So
fixed.
the problem isn't with the tool, though. The problem is in the myriad of ways that we've tried to use the tool, tried to replace where you need a human who's able to discern a Latin A from a Cyrillic A. They look really similar, and they even sound, I think they sound kind of similar, but they have different meanings and different uses in their languages.
Yeah, I also think part of the big problem was that Sam Altman came out of the gate year and a half ago now. Was it 2 years yet?
2 years, almost 2 years.
In November this year, yeah. And he hyped it to the nth degree, right? He wanted lots of money, but they didn't really have a definite like global use case for it. It was like, here we got this tech and it's amazing, and then you're gonna make trillions, take over every job in the world. We don't really know how we're gonna apply it. And also, we should be careful about calling it AI. I mean, they are calling it AI in all the reports, and Goldman Sachs calls it AI. It's a large language model. There is AI that is very powerful. I think the problem is they tried to make it just too general to too many people for too little real use cases, right? So I can sit there at home and write, fun poems or something on it, but that's not a use case that makes money. So according to Goldman Sachs, from their report, it's titled Gen AI. This is the one they wrote on June 25th. Gen AI, too much spend, too little benefit. Tech giants and beyond are so set to spend $1 trillion on the AI CapEx in the coming years, with so far little to show for it. So will this large spend ever pay off? MIT's Darren, I cannot say his name, ACEMOGLU, and GS Jim Covella are skeptical. They're seeing only limited US economic upside from AI in the next decade, and they're arguing that the technology isn't designed to solve the complex problems that would justify the costs, which may not decline as which may decline may not decline as many expect. Costs will not decline. So they're saying they're more optimistic about its potential to generate returns beyond current the picks and shovels phase they call it. But there's no killer application that has emerged. And current chip shortage, the looming power shortage, will constrain AI's growth. So they see room for AI to run, but not in the way that it's been hyped, and it will not deliver on its promise. And that means that there is a bubble that could burst.
Well, yeah, again, the bubble is a mental one, not a physical one. And I remember the earliest
Well, it is
days of the
physical
internet.
too. It
No,
is physical too.
hear me out for a
Moving
sec.
on to Sim
I
Power.
remember the earliest days of the internet. It costs so much to build. Y2K came along, and suddenly there was tons and tons and tons of money to build fiber, to lay fiber all around the world, because it was less expensive to lay fiber to India and China and get and Indonesia and get highly trained programmers there to write code than it was to have North American programmers write that code. Laying the fiber was cheaper. Building the city, that's what we're doing right now, and that's what's being done with AI. People wondered if the internet could ever pay for itself. Damned if I know if it even has or not. But I don't know if the infrastructure of my city, Toronto, or the infrastructure of your city, Las Vegas, has ever paid for itself either. And I'm not really sure how economists could even calculate that, given the extraordinary use of it. AI is a new structure, a new series of structures in the area of cyberspace and in the environment we work in. And I see it as like sort of a city that's being built right now. And that people are treating what should be a serious city as an amusement park, but and it was built to be, but that's, I guess, how you recoup costs fast. And maybe that's why Altman had to come out of the gates like that, eh? Maybe they had to recoup costs because things were getting so out of control. But given how much it costs just to, I don't know, do whatever it is, write all those poems about cats, that people are using AI for. I don't know if opening up really does recoup costs or you create even more costs. We'll see what happens in the future. A future that may not be as dictated by AI as we'd assumed.
I think the issue for, and again, when we say AI, we're talking about large language models here, not all AI, but I'm not correcting you, Jim, just so people know. But I think the problem is that it was promoted and hyped as the end all be all of technology that would lead to AGI, would replace workers, which made companies very happy. But it has three massive problems that don't seem very solvable. One, the amount of chips they have to use, and the chips are very specific. It's not like you just put any chip in there. The amount of water and resources it requires, water meaning coolant for the power sources. So the energy costs are astronomical. And then, of course, the problem of being inaccurate and wrong all the time. There aren't many applications where something can be inaccurate and wrong all the time, and you make billions of dollars off of it.
Major League Baseball. It could be
Okay.
anything.
Maybe we'll put them in as refs, AI, the AI ref. But there really aren't massive applications. The other thing, often when I see someone come out with an application for AI, you can tell because you and I are on the other end. We work with consumers and markets all the time. They haven't done any market research on the product. It's like no one was asking for that. It doesn't solve any issues. I've met quite a few investors over the years here in Vegas. The first thing they look for is what does it solve? And second thing they look for is has anyone ever thought of it before? Because if they haven't, it's probably not a good product. Because if no one's ever thought of this before, even if it's using a different source than the LLM, in a world of 8 billion people, then it's probably not good, right? So that doesn't mean it's not good, but they don't tend to invest in those things. So anyways, they were convinced to invest in all this, but the costs keep going up, the power needs go up, the chips are going up, the chips are more expensive. So it has a lot of things that make it not a worthwhile investment for big investors. And just like what happened in early days of the internet, we had the bubble burst with the dot-com burst because they were investing all these basically companies that weren't really companies, and then everything came crashing down. They're warning people that it could crash down. There's even articles right this week about taking stocks out of certain AI plays. So we'll see what happens. But I mean, those are things that you kind of could all see from the beginning. You and I could, but I think people that were hyped in it and live in that world of hype weren't looking at, and now it's a reality bubble. So we'll see if that leads to a bubble burst.
And then, in many ways, the dot-com crash was just the market figuring out what the internet was and what it wasn't. This is sort of the same thing now. The market's just sort of figuring out what this is and what it isn't. And if you've overly invested in what it isn't, well, that's maybe it'll be there one day. Probably not. The market's again. No matter how you look at the economy, one thing that never, ever, ever fails is the users dictate what a product trajectory and how things are developed. And if this product isn't accurate all the time, can't be guaranteed to be accurate all the time, it can't lay off employees from whom whom you're paying to be accurate.
Exactly.
It's a snake eating its own tail situation. You know what I find really funny, though?
What's
know what AI is amazing at doing? It's amazing at, again, calculating things, adding up numbers, seeing what's about one, two, one and one
oh,
will equal two
it's
in the
not so
AI
good at
world
numbers.
all the time. That's just how it
Yeah.
works. One and one will always equal two because that's how it's been written a gajillion times over. I
Yeah.
think AI could replace middle managers far, far faster than it can replace most employees. I think AI could replace a CEO infinitely faster than it could replace the legions of people below the CEO who were working to make that operation happen.
Well, I don't know that
because
I can replace
its
a
skill
CEO,
sets
but
are more designed that way.
It definitely can't replace workers, we're finding out. So if you replace your workers with it, you might have a sad comeuppance.
Indeed. And sometimes things just don't need to change. And Microsoft, I hope, will learn this from the outrage that I really hope comes its way. And maybe it will, and maybe it will, because people don't really even, I don't even know if people even use this product as much as this as I know. Notepad has had spell checker added to it.
Yeah, why?
Because they could. Because they could. Not because they should, but because they could. At least
yeah,
they didn't put AI in there, huh?
We don't know, right? Maybe they did. I posted a story this morning on my personal Facebook, and one of our friends came in and was like, why? Why? And I was like, yeah, because people use Notepad not to have anything else there but the text, especially coders. So if you're coding, apparently, though, you can turn it off. So that's good. You can turn it off for certain file types, so that's good. But still, it's like, why? But I guess they're getting
WordPad?
Yes, this year. They're getting rid of it.
So Notepad replaces WordPad, even though Notepad had its own specific and sacred application.
Yes. Like, we talked about this before, but, you know, I used to use it all the time when I was doing HTML code to make sure that nothing was getting carried over. Like, someone sent me a Word doc,
yeah.
And in the background, things
There's
you couldn't see would get carried over into my HTML and home site, which is basically like Notepad. I was like, how does that happen? Because I'd published a document. I'm like, where are all these spaces or weird letters coming from? And it would be because in the background, it had carried it over. I couldn't see it, but it was being seen by the computers.
Yeah,
so I put it in Notepad. Yeah, go
for
ahead.
Microsoft Word to format things properly in the WYSIWYG environment, the what you can see, what you get sort of environment, it had to add extraneous code, especially around weird ASCII symbols. And whenever you'd cut and paste, say you cut and paste and threw that into like your WordPress editor, you'd almost always carry that extraneous code with you. And that's why sometimes, even today on some websites, you see that little string of weirdness in between letters. That's because somebody copied and pasted. That's often because somebody copied and pasted from Word directly into WordPress.
Yeah.
The right step is to throw it into Notepad where there is no weirdness. Nothing at all. It's just a stripped down device that takes all extraneous code out and just gives you the letters,
yeah.
And then you can put them. Still, here's the problem. Programmers use Notepad, and in program language is based on English most of the time, is not English, even resembling English. It's small command lines. They're often like redacted words as command lines, PWR instead of POWER. And you can imagine how your markup would get horribly marked up by spell check. It would be distracting as hell.
Yeah. Thank goodness you can turn it off because it also has autocorrect and they've added to it. It's so weird to add this to Notepad. Like, just why get rid of WordPad? They added character count. Okay. Dart mode. Coders probably like that. Tabs. Copilot integration and a virtual fidget spinner. I don't think I've ever gone to Notepad to look for a virtual fidget spinner. Like, okay, cute, but why is it in Notepad? Because Notepad's supposed to be the stripped down text version of everything. Like, it's just a TXT file. It's nothing else. And Copilot integration just seems like a weird place to put it.
If Microsoft wants to do something useful for me in that way, make it easier to get to a version of Minesweeper that doesn't have a bunch of ads surrounding it.
Yes.
I'd appreciate that.
I use a Mac. Is Minesweeper still a thing?
Oh my gosh. I mean, no, nobody plays Minesweeper anymore. It's like playing Hangman. Nobody plays Hangman anymore either. But if you're of a certain age, it's kind of like doing a Rubik's Cube in a couple seconds. You know, it's a dumb diversion while you're sitting on a hold or waiting for a Zoom meeting to start.
Gotcha. I still love playing Minecraft.
If
yeah,
you're a PC
so
user, this isn't your problem, Christine, but if you're a Microsoft user,
no.
update your Windows PC in the next 21 days. Why in the next 3 weeks? I don't understand that part of the story.
The 21 days is the federal government's limit. They're going to literally shut the computers down for people if they haven't updated them, because there's a big security issue. So,
So update Microsoft users, update your computers now. Run a new Windows update and run if you got the Office suite, run an update on any resident files you have on your computer.
yes, exactly. And it's a very complicated exploit, so we don't need to spend 10 minutes going over that here. Just know to update. it is a pretty big deal update issue, big deal security issue. See
A
my tech talk
spoofing
there?
vulnerability that's
Big
high
deal.
impact on confidentiality, integrity, and
There
availability.
you go.
I have no idea exactly what that means, but it seems to mean don't screw around.
It's a big deal tech update, security update. That's my tech talk for the day. Big deal. So
Okay.
yeah. So it opens a URL in Internet Explorer. Gosh, I can't speak today. Internet Explorer. The heat got to me, even though I'm sitting in the AC.
What if you don't have Explorer though? What if your computer is sans Explorer? What if you
Is
have
there
like
any
Edge?
Windows computer sign? Well,
Yeah, they don't make Explorer anymore. Explorer was depreciated years
I
ago.
don't know, because it's affecting Windows 10 and 11. So, but apparently, it opens up a different browser than Chrome or Edge. So, I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, yeah. So, anyway, so it is a spoofing vulnerability, and it has a lot of privacy implications. So, you just want to update.
I was gonna go with my don't screw around because a great segue for don't screw around if you buy a big platform. Okay, so
I know where you're going.
Takapona. So Elon Musk is a shower, not a grower. That's Christine's smart ass comment besides the story. Okay.
We don't read the grid, people.
I'm sorry, that's really we put smart ass remarks beside our stories. That's pretty funny. So Elon Musk is a shower, not a grower. So the X is stuck. X is in neutral. X in the last year grew its user base by 4 million people, which might sound like 4 million is a lot of people because it's 4 million more than they had before. But this is a company that was growing by. It was enjoying double-digit growth, tens of millions of new users year after year after year before it was taken over by Musk in October 22. In the last year, Q2 2023 to the end of Q2 2024, they've added just over 4 million users, which I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they're counting about depreciation of users who've left. And how many of those users are actually real? I don't know. Have they added any users for
I
real?
was just gonna say, I have never seen so many fake accounts and bots run. Like, I'm used to getting swarmed on Twitter, anything related to politics, and it's normally like 60% fake accounts and bots, and like 40% real people. In the last 3 weeks, it has literally been 99% fake accounts and bots, and then like 1% like real people. Like, I blocked 200 accounts the other day easily. And five were real people out of all those accounts. So yeah, it could literally be a ton of bots, because I'm seeing a whole bunch of 2009 accounts resurface. So 2009, 2010, 2012. I have 0 followers from 2009. I'm a real account.
You
Okay.
know why I really don't like covering the AI stories and covering stories about Twixtor so much? Because it leaves me feeling cynical afterwards. And, you know, I might be a cynical person by nature. Heaven knows I'm certainly attracted to the toil of politics. But I don't like feeling cynical. I like feeling hopeful and optimistic. And many of the times, these stories don't make me feel hopeful and optimistic. They make me feel the exact opposite. I dislike covering stories about X, even though they have to be covered. They have to be talked about. So does this. I don't like this story. And even this one's even weirder because it's hard to take seriously. It sounds like something a child would say. Like we're 7-year-olds yelling at each other over a sandbox or something, which essentially I guess we are, except we're doing this with adult as adults. Apparently, I mean, then Zuckerberg must be feeling like no good deed goes unpunished here. But apparently, Donald Trump is threatening to throw Meta CEO, Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg in jail if he becomes president because of something or another.
He doesn't like Zuckerberg because he kicked him off the platform years ago. But he says the direct quote from the tweet was, all I can say, if I'm elected president, we will pursue election fraudsters at levels never seen before, and they will be sent to prison for long periods of time. So we already know who you are. Don't do it, Zuckerbergs. Be careful.
Well, Zuckerbucks. He's not
Zuckerbucks, sorry,
Zuckerberg.
right.
He's
Zuckerbucks, you're right.
Zuckerbucks.
Yeah,
Right.
you're right. I read that wrong. Zuckerbucks, yeah. So he gave Zuckerberg gave money to nonpartisan, he gave grants, nonpartisan grants to election boards in 2020, which are just so that places could run elections properly. Has nothing to do with, like, it doesn't have anything to do with the election results. You know, it's not, it doesn't put the finger on the scale. There's no way to put the thumb on the scale or something like that.
But this is why Trump dislikes him, because he donated to help run an election, and that may have, given that the election didn't go in Trump's favor. Anything that helped run the election didn't work for Trump,
Yes.
so bad.
Yes, basically. He gave grants too. These are nonpartisan grants. So Republicans and Democrats got them. They weren't given to like parties specifically either. They're mostly probably given, it just says local election board, so I'm gonna guess at the state and county level. So it's probably like my county's clerk, and Clark County would put in for a grant to get money to help to run the election. So it's nothing about putting your finger on the scale of an election result.
Okay, so
Then
why do we have to cover this story? Because
the Jim said
this
so.
is some no, no,
No, I'm
because
kidding.
no, this is something that affects the environment we work in. It's our world. If it's hard to take seriously that somebody running for president of the United States is talking about throwing the owner of a social media platform in jail and doing this at a campaign event. If Joe Biden did this, we would cover it. If Robert Kennedy did this, we would cover it. It's extraordinary that we have to cover it at all, and disheartening that we have to cover it at all.
Well, and I think we have to cover it because the political environment has changed. So I know we don't talk politics here. That's not what I'm getting into. But if anyone had said this, let's just call him Joe. I'm not Joe,
Okay.
because it's one of the people running for president. But let's just call him.
If the current president had said this, we would cover it.
Well, no, that's not.
That anyone said this, it's insane.
We'll just call him Milo. That's my cat who's sitting in front of me. We'll say Milo is running for president and he becomes president. In the past, there's no way a president could do what is being said here. It's just not possible. Like legally, there's just no way he could just throw people in jail. But the Supreme Court decision that came down giving the president immunity for official acts means
Means you
as
have to take these pronouncements
you have to
seriously.
take these seriously, yes, because as long as they're in the so if I was to call, if I was running for president, or if I became president and I called somebody, let's say the governor of the state of California, and said that you will send all your almonds to me from now on, never to go anywhere else. Like that would be stupid, right? Because nobody could do that. But under the new law, I'm trying to keep this out of politics as much as I can. I might be a really bad example,
No, I
but
think people, I assume people are aware of that,
yeah. So
the
because I
immunity and
made the
such.
call to the governor as the president, that's an official act. So anything I do after that You can't bring in the fact that I made the call, and you can't as evidence, and you can't bring in my intent as evidence. So all you could do is say, California is now sending all the almonds of the state to the president, and that would violate a whole bunch of laws, but you can't prove it. So they can get away, as long as under disguised under an official act, like the call to the governor, then it can be done. So we'll do have to take this thing seriously.
What I find astounding and almost quaint was how 10 years ago, just 10 short years ago, Dave Davies and I were vigorously arguing about net neutrality. We even went on a
yes.
We even went on a search engine strategies tour. Was it?
I had a picture of you two doing it at that conference. Yes,
I'm pretty sure it was the last of the SES years of the SES conferences. We even went on, you know, the circuit with that debate. Not that anybody showed up for, but it was,
I
it was
did.
So important.
I took the picture.
Indeed, it was so important at that time, eh? It was actually a packed room. It was a fun debate. And now we're, you know, talking about the owner of one of the largest social media platform in the world being threatened with jail by a presidential candidate.
Yes.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Right, and then legally it could occur, so people can't blow this off like they used to be able to.
The only reason I'm taking something like it seriously, otherwise it's like what a 5-year-old would say.
Yeah, otherwise you wouldn't cover it. So
you know what I do like talking about that makes me feel, believe it or not, less cynical. Believe it or not.
Believe it or not.
Google stuff. Like. Did you know? And yeah, I know you know because you're the one who turned me on to this. But I already saw it. I watched it last night. Or yesterday afternoon, while trying to come down off of work, Google appreciates the SEO feedback from the last core update. John Mueller said it was really helpful. Apparently, they've talked about it. Search quality and ranking teams—it's been really helpful in the evaluations and discussions. And that's all we know because it's all.
That's all we know. I was all excited about the video when I saw the title. I'm like, okay, that's good. I'm glad to know you appreciate it. I would like some little answers, but it does sound like they're ramping up for a core update pretty soon, though. Is my guess.
Maybe they are. You know, maybe they are. But I'm going to temper my guess with nothing's going to happen until after September, and I'm going to say that because I don't think that. Anything, I don't think anything has a hall pass at Google right now. Nothing moves without severe scheduling and the okay from several higher ups. Nothing new is going to come out of Google right now. I think Google's going to go back. Google made the new Coke mistake.
Yes.
And now it's going back to old Coke in big time.
Yes, that's my feeling. I agree. And I do think they finally found a solution to the helpful content issue because they originally came out and said, oh, well, you know, you just might not deserve to be in search. And then it went to, well, you might need 2 or 3 updates. And now it was, yeah, maybe the next update. Now they're saying there should be recoveries in the next update. So hopefully.
I thought helpful had gone ever fresh. It was just part of everything now.
No, helpful content's part of the core update.
Okay.
But the old helpful contents that like got annihilated in no recovery when they switched it from site-wide to page level, that those, I have hope for people on the next update that they may have resolved that issue. So I don't think it was a site issue. I think it was a Google issue. After looking at many of the sites.
I suspect it was as well. But then we get, and I don't know how to feel about this answer exactly. And maybe it's because the way I look at Google, I'm looking at it all wrong. Probably true. So responding to questions about why serious experts in a field are being outranked by serious Redditors, John Mueller suggested that maybe there's something more to information than just its credibility. And this is the part where my brain started screaming at me in some bleeding voice, which I didn't understand, but it was definitely there. There could be many more dimensions to information than just its credibility, but if it isn't credible, what's the point? I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, I get if you were talking like, I love this artist Ren, right? And let's say I was like on Reddit going, hey, what do you think about his new album? And that's opinion. So it doesn't matter if they surface something that's a wrong opinion, so no such thing. But yeah, when it comes to like, things like, because those AI overviews that were wrong, they got that stuff from Reddit, right? To eat rocks and drink urine. Those came
Use
from
glue for pizza.
Reddit.
Yeah.
Yeah, those came from Reddit. So yeah, but people also forget that the Reddit surfacing is part of the Hidden Gems algorithm, which was meant to surface user-generated content. And they've never said but why they really did this, but I have a belief that when the AI stuff started coming out, they thought this would be a way to counteract it with like real comments from real people. It's just but the problem is it's just kind of annoying.
But okay, so in the example, and this example that was cited in Search Engine Journal, they even included, I think it was John even included a helpful video, a recap from a British cooking show, which didn't make the answer any clearer whatsoever to me.
No, the answer is very unclear. It's a long article from, or not long, long, but longer, from Roger Monti at Search Engine Journal. And they didn't really make it very clear. And that's why I think, because it's the Hidden Gems algorithm, so it automatically puts it up there. Like when people are in Vegas and like, how can I rank locally with all these big hotels and casinos? You can. There's always a few slots for local. It's the same thing with user-generated
Okay.
content, mostly Reddit. There's a few slots and that little answer
But with
box
okay,
of multiple questions from Reddit.
your example's perfect. Vegas local information, this is exactly what Hidden Gems was made for. So you know more about where to find inexpensive parking in Vegas, and you care more about that than anybody I know has ever cared about anything.
Right,
You
so
really care
expensive.
about where to get the free parking in Vegas. This is local information that you have because you've been studying it. It's important to you. And if somebody's coming to Vegas, your answer, which might have been in a Reddit, because you're speaking in the Vegas subreddit, like that would be actually very valuable and very useful. That's exactly what Hidden Gems was made for.
Yes, and I think it was on user-generated content only, like Quora and Reddit. So that's why it comes up. Like people are like, why is it above mine? Because it's meant to be above yours. There's a slot there for it,
But the thing
basically.
is, that's useful. That is useful because
Yes.
you're telling me I'm going to get free parking over at this hotel. Now, assuming that hotel is still standing and hasn't been torn down for a new hotel or baseball stadium, that's good, useful information.
Yes.
Why? And this isn't meant for you, Christine. I apologize because I'm asking you, but why Google? Because I know y'all are listening. We're number three after all. I know y'all are listening. Why is using glue to hold cheese to pizza, when actually it's more useful for pineapple on pizza. Why is that coming up over useful information like Christine and her parking knowledge? This is the question to Google, and I don't think that I've seen it. I think that I don't even think they're trying to dance around the issue. I don't even think they're trying to come near the issue. If they're
No,
getting
this
their
is
answers from Reddit.
yes. And also, again, it's a user-generated slot. It's a slot. So there's something from reading the DOJ documents, I don't know if it's still called this, but it was called Tanagram. And it arranges the final search result page. So NavBoost would be part of the process that arranged the blue links, but there's also something called Glue that gets all the other pieces. And so there's a piece in the page where it needs to slot in a Reddit or a UGC post because it is in there as a Hidden Gems algorithm, and it supersedes other algorithms to have a slot in there,
Okay, so it
just
has
like
to be
local
there.
does. Just
It's
and it
got to
has to be
fill
on all
something in there.
searches. If the person puts a search in, Google's algorithms determine that there should be something there from user generated. It will come from Hidden Gems, and they'll outrank other pages. The weird thing though is, remember I did one on NavBoost and Reddit like 2 3 weeks ago, probably 3 weeks ago. And it ranked in the top 10 like right away, like within 2 hours. And it was there for a week or two. It's gone now. It's no longer there. So I was thinking, oh, this would be a great way to get clients in the top 10, right? Because I'm an SEO. And but no, it doesn't actually stay because it doesn't always continue to produce that UGC box or the UGC content. Yeah. So it changes over time. It's not permanent. So, but people don't like it for the most part. So it could also be Google's pulled back on showing those as well.
I well, again, if they're not ready for prime time, they shouldn't be there. And I still can't wrap my head around how useful information is if it's not credible. If it ain't true, it's just a meme. Is that not? I mean, like, what am I missing here? It could be funny. I love funny,
Yeah.
but I'm looking for information. I can make it. I
Sure.
can make
Yeah.
I can make information funny. I get paid for that. But like, shoot, this is just, I don't know what to do with this in my head.
You know, I think also they might be trying to compete with like the TikToks and the Reels, Insta Reels and stuff, because those are like just regular people giving information to people. And there's this misnomer that like so many of the youth generation are just using TikTok to search, which isn't true. They use Google too. But it could be their way to compete with it. A lot of the stuff that they did in the last year wasn't particularly well thought out, it doesn't seem. It seems to be one of those things.
Okay.
So.
It's, and again, it's just meta mind blowing. Okay, let's get into some of them again. More stuff you can do with Google and stuff you can do to actually improve your search results or improve client results in Google. Search Console is now letting you set shipping and return policies in Search Console. And when you are setting it, this will take precedence over structured data. So getting information to the consumer and then getting consumer reaction information to Search Console.
Such a weird thing to put in Search Console. I just don't understand it yet. The CSI that uses it.
You would expect that to be in Google Analytics more,
Yeah,
definitely.
or even like a structured data like element that says take this over everything else. It just seems like a weird place Search Console to put that.
Well, how to say this? There's when you look at say page snippets or breadcrumbs, merchant listings, shopping tabs or review snippets or whatever, those are all driven primarily by schema. By the markup language, and then Google gives you a whole bunch of reasons why or errors that it found in the way you've used markup, or in some cases not used it at all. So this is sort of the same thing. Google will be saying, "We've detected this policy on your page. It's clear and." It conveys information, but it doesn't convey the information the way we want to convey it. So we're not displaying it. We see that you're trying to do it, but we're not displaying it. There's an error here. So that's useful. And that's a very Search Console-y thing. And then you want to see once you do correct that you do correct any errors that they found, and they do start with just displaying the information. You can't see, at least not, you can't see directly how they interact with that snippet of the structured data, but you can see how they're interacting with the structured data, usually by comparing the number of impressions by the number of clicks. I'm sorry, the number of times that the structured data actually appears.
Sure. Oh, by the way, there is a precedence to how they take in the information. So first it's product level feed submitted to Merchant Center, return settings in the content API for shopping, then settings in Merchant Center or Search Console, then organizational level markup, and then product level merchant listing markup. That's a lot of a lot of things. I think Google should probably come up with one field and then just tell people to put it there. But right now there's five. Product level being the top one. Product level feeds in Merchant Center is the top one.
Okay, I'm actually choosing the next story we should jump to because I'm really, really being conscious of the time, and we have a huge list of stories to try to get
We
through.
do. We still have like we took a long time talking about the AI bubble, so we still have about 6 or 7 minutes.
Okay, where should we go next?
Well, we probably should talk about the Google saying things are not good signals.
Oh yeah, I like that one actually. That's kind of an important one because that speaks to how we talk to Google and sometimes how we talk to ourselves. So Google really does like structured data a lot.
Yes.
Google likes schema a lot. And schema.org is an organization built on an agreement between Google, Bing, and several of the second and third tier search engines. Google doesn't necessarily like meta languages that we SEO make up ourselves because they don't think it's very trustworthy. That's what it comes
What?
down to at the end
What?
of the day.
Trustworthy, not trustworthy. SES, come on.
They could think that the markup languages their funded committee comes up with is trustworthy, but they don't like it when SEOs make stuff up. Case in point, and this has been, and by the way, I think this is settled, buried, nail in coffin,
I
deep
hope.
underground.
I hope. I know where you're going. I
I
hope.
can't see it resurfacing. I can see it being useful because a user might want to know. I know I want to know, but I'm not a search engine, I'm a reader. Okay, so authorship. Authorship is important, but not for search rankings.
And it's not
Authorship,
always
no, it is
important.
important. It's very important because I'm the reader and I want to know,
I say
but
sometimes, it's not always.
it doesn't mean you're going to get a good search ranking from it, but it does mean I'm going to trust that piece just that little bit more. And I might read a piece from your publication one or two or three or 10 more times because you've given me, the reader, something that I know I appreciate that has been useful and helpful to me. However, Google will look at you and say, good job, Charlie, but it's not going to help your rankings. It's just going to have Google look at you and go, good job, Charlie. That's all. And the reason Google says good job, Charlie, is not because you've given a tag for an author, but because you've left me, the reader, feeling good about my experience. Google doesn't even know I feel good about my experience. It just knows this is a signal that will probably make me feel good about my experience,
But they don't
but
look
it's
at
not
it.
a ranking signal.
They don't look at it. They don't look at authorship signals because it could, I could say,
You could
I
cheat.
know. Yes, I could say my friend is Neil deGrasse Tyson and he wrote this piece for my blog and I could put that on there and Google be like, well, I have no way to know if you know this guy or not, right? I don't know. So they don't give you any placement for that. They also don't do it for algorithmically determined ones. So there's this idea that you put them in the knowledge graph and that gives you special ranking, right? But they don't do that either. And
Nope.
what Gary said was having something similar for authorship, I think would be a mistake. And he was talking about, it was relating to something else in the story, canonicals. If it's algorithmically determined, then it, perhaps it would be more accurate or could be higher accuracy. But honestly, they don't see the value in it. And there really isn't any value in it because they already have a patent that says, I will compare documents under a topical vector and I will see if they use similar entities. And if they do, then they're probably talking with expertise because all these other documents we determined are good, they write with these entities and you write with these entities. That is much easier, cheaper, less hassle way to determine if something has expertise in it than trying to figure out every author of every document that's ever written on the web, which is billions of pages. So, and also the only thing, Jim, I was saying is sometimes is if I was just writing like, you know, where to go to get free parking, no one cares who wrote
Oh, indeed,
that.
yes. Well, hold it. I care if you are the Vegas tour guide. I know that you
Right.
are. Like
But that'd be my website.
that Rick guy who smokes a lot of pot and goes around Europe for PBS. If he tells me where to get munchies in Europe, I'm gonna listen.
Well, there's truth to that. And there are influencers, celebrities. But if I had a site, like there's a site here, vegas.com. And if vegas.com tells me where the parking is, I don't really need to know which author at vegas.com wrote it. So I'm just saying, so people don't spend $1,000 on special authors and, you know, a page because they want
Oh,
a doctor or
indeed.
something.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
yeah. But
Yeah.
and this happened because SEOs so very desperately want to find the edge. Of
Yes.
course, we do, because that's what our clients pay us for. And so authorship is mentioned in the search rater's guide, the quality rater's guide, sorry, quality rater's guide. And it's mentioned as something you might want to look at because it makes users happy. That's what is in the, that was mentioned. I've read it. I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but you know, generally it's a signal that means that user will probably, you know, surf away from that page with a generally positive experience. But it doesn't mean you're going to get a good ranking. And it's only because I want to know, because I'm curious as heck.
Yeah, it's just it's the quality rater's guide is just to assess how algorithms treat things, and so it's a common language they can use. So, but yeah, so basically, authors aren't going to help you at all, and they've been saying this since 2018. Danny had when it first became a deal. The original authorship tag was when Google was doing this identity project. We won't get into that right now; it's too much time. But basically, I could say I write for Search Engine Journal at the time I did. And they would say they do write for me, and then they knew I was an author for that article for that publication, and they could verify it. But that all went away when Google Plus died. That was part of the Google Plus functions.
There's got to be a half dozen other ways Google can do that. There's got to be. Seriously, there's got to be a bunch of other ways Google can figure out who you are and what your corpus of work has been. Okay, here's one that I find really interesting, and not for the surface story itself, but for what I think the implications might be. Google's testing double role carousel for shopping search ads. Because that doesn't sound like a lot, right? Doesn't sound like much. But think of where carousels are going to be applied in the near future, or are probably going to be applied in the near future. I think Google's testing how people react to different layers of things close together, because I got a feeling we're going to see an expansion of carousel type placements inside of any AI overview, any AIOs that come out in the future.
Maybe, possibly. I'll be honest. I am not a fan of the e-commerce pages in Google now. I really am not. I avoid them like the plague. So we'll see if people like to stack product carousels. I don't mind like a line of products at the top. I'm talking about the one with the big filter on the left-hand side, like it's Amazon. It just
No,
it is.
I work with a lot of e-commerce pages and organizing information, especially when you have a lot of different iterations on similar products, is really hard to do.
It
So
is.
I see what they're trying to do here.
I just
Like
don't need it in my search results. I want to go to the website and do it. I don't need to do it here. That's just my thing. It's just very cluttered.
yeah. Again, Google's trying to how
And
does I
it's
mean you know what they're doing. They're trying to get around the need to go to the You only need to
Amazon.
go to the page at the last second. That's Google's
Yes.
thinking.
And I'm like, I wanted to find out like, and also, by the way, they put the weird boxes of these in between actual listings. So it looks like it goes with the listing above, but it doesn't. And it's different stores. And so when these first came out, it would always throw me because I click on it like it was the products from that store and it was a product from different stores. So they put these back in. I see, I'm seeing double carousels here. But it's up to what people prefer. I just find it very obnoxious. So I tend to like try not to trigger an e-commerce result. It's too much. I just want to go to the website. I just want to know if the company has it and then go to the website.
Okay, I think we got time for one or two more. We're definitely butting up to the hour though. Where do you want to, where do you think we need to be?
Well, I do think we need to mention that Google, this should be a quick story though. When we can do the quick stories and time up. Google search supports labeling AI generated or manipulated images. Now, they were talking about doing it like over a year ago, but they finally actually releasing one. So they're using the IPTC photo metadata. It's the International Press Telecommunications Council, IPTC standards. They were originally only available to news organizations, but now it's going to be in your metadata. So if I go into Adobe and I create a photo or I create an image using their AI, it will put it into the data that goes with that file. When I upload it, so say I put it on Google, Google can read that and then label it as an AI.
Okay, well, what if you go to Perplexity or use any other AI and create images? Is there an advantage to labeling it as AI, or is there a disadvantage to not labeling it?
Well, the thing is, it will show it in, it's supposed to show it in Google search, like it's supposed to show you it's AI. So I think the advantage for the user that uses search is over time, those come to realize what looks like an AI image.
Well, indeed, but why should the advertiser, the person who's putting the image
they're
up
not
in the
labeling
first place,
it.
why should they?
They're not labeling it. The product is. The software is. So AI labels in Photoshop are automatically added to this file, to this IPTC file that you can't see. I mean, you can try to find it, but it's not like something you can easily just go edit. So the IPTC file, it gives other information about the photo as well. It's a metadata. So like it even tells, like people have seen this before, you upload a photo and the software can read like what focal length you use, what camera lens you use, that kind of, what shutter speed, right? Mm-hmm. It's like that kind of data. But now it's just going to say this is a
AI generated.
Generated image. And then it's used on two types of image manipulation. One's called in painting, which is just enhancing the image for the purpose of like restoring or reconstructing it, filling like missing parts. Like when you go into Adobe and it extends the background. And then outpainting is the other type, and that's of adding to the image. So actually, I'm sorry, this is the one where it's the extending the border, extending the background. The other in painting would be like parts of it are missing and the AI fills it in. So it will trigger something called digital source type. We'll say composite with trained algorithmic media is the name of the metadata that is being filled in the background. And then it will tell you what it was, what happened to it, what kind of in painting or out painting that they used.
Okay, I think again we have time for one more, but we are still up against the edge of time.
Ooh, yeah. Some of them are just, let's get some quick. Like we didn't have to go into some of these. Like Google's putting thin video snippets into search, which just means you'll see video snippets in your search results that are just, you know, small. Like tiny thumbnails.
That could be quite, that could be really useful if you want to get attention.
This is true. Yes,
if,
it is good.
If the SERP moves, click it.
And you have to have your structured data for that. Google's expanding translated search results to more languages. So they're adding Arabic. I cannot say the next one.
Gujarati,
thank you. Korean, Persian, Thai, Turkish, Urdu, Vietnamese,
Urdu,
and
Vietnamese.
Google Ads enabled broad match search by default, which is just a pain in the neck for everyone who does PPC. But now they're automatically broad matching your. This is where they make all their money, by the way.
Yeah, I was about to say it's a pain in the neck. Yes,
yeah.
From reaching around to your wallet, that's where you get the pain in the neck.
Yeah, every time they're like, "Hey, we're adding this," and really they're taking away the ability to control the ad itself. So it's really bad for PPC people. And Google test shifting Google logo to the right in search results. I don't know why.
I'm guessing because they want to put something where the logo currently sits. What they want to put there is the question.
I don't know. Yes, maybe. Maybe the trigger. Yeah, I was just thinking that. Maybe it'll be AI overview.
It's going to be AI overview. We don't know for sure, but it's going to be AI overview.
There'll be a little link. Oh, and another one real quick story is if you want to save a little money, Bing Search is now showing coupons in your Explore menu, meaning when you go to the search result, there's something called the Explore menu, and it will list coupons for that site. So that's kind of a cool function, not good for sites that run coupons, but good for users. So,
I think that's great for sites that run coupons because it gets the value passed to the consumer. The consumer is going to use that coupon at that store, spend more money, because that's what coupons are really all about. Everybody wins.
I'm sorry, I meant coupon sites. But you're right.
Oh, yeah, well, the coupon sites. Yeah, well,
yeah,
sure,
yeah.
That'll be a little bit more difficult for them, but sites like that kind of had to know 2 years ago, November, that their days were numbered. Yeah. AI agents will be sorting all that awfully soon.
Hopefully not for some of my clients.
You know what they can do? They can make their sites really, really, really AI friendly. It's all about sorting and making information available. That's what it has to come down to for them. They have to make their site more useful than the actual site itself. Hard,
sure.
Eh?
Sure.
No, honestly, that's what whole fields of SEO are going to have to be about in the future.
Well, if the LLMs make it through, remember the bubble could burst and that could all go away.
Oh, indeed, so, indeed. Yeah. But you know, there's going to be some form of AI used at one level or another. If it isn't being used at the macro level, it'll likely be used at the micro level. We'll see what grows.
And then there's one final piece that's good for user information. I think that covers all our stories, by the way. One final one, Google Business Profiles will include consumer alerts on them, which will notify those viewing your local listing on Google about possible violations or suspension of spam. So they can show like a banner that can result in review posting restrictions or reviews being removed, basically review spam. So if your site's getting hit by review spam, someone called you out on social media to their million influencers and you're suddenly getting all these ugly reviews and Google thinks that they're spam, not really valid, they may put this notice on your business profile during the time that that happens. It does pretty
Rather
good.
than just removing the offensive piece of spam.
Yeah, and they'll say it. There are three items that you can see in the banner. You may see one that just said there were suspicious reviews and they've been removed, that there's posting restrictions, or that they've removed reviews for the business for a period of time or maybe permanently.
Couple of years ago, I had a client. They were a business center. They rented office space and virtual office services and such. And they had this one client who would drop a nasty Google review towards the end of a month or a billing period. And they used it as a negotiating tactic.
Oh,
I swear
wow.
to goodness. And worse, they had this business center over a barrel because one bad review, there's so many business centers are ubiquitous. They're everywhere, right? Especially post-COVID. One bad review and somebody's going to the next website in like milliseconds. And this client knew that they had the client that they had the customer, my customer, over the barrel, and there was Google wouldn't budge on this. It was maddening.
Yeah, it's, when you get bad reviews, it can be very difficult. We had a friend of ours, I won't say who had 100% perfect reviews, and they worked very hard to make sure that happened, right? They always attended to clients if there was a difficulty and made it right. And then some guy got mad at them, and he was like some hacker in the basement kind of thing. And he took their 100% good rating down to like 80% in a very short period of time. And he worked with Google for months to get that fixed, and they still refused to fix it. I don't know how he finally resolved it. But and the guy just kept dumping, using fake accounts and stuff like that, just dumping more and more negative reviews.
So didn't take some action. Cool. So, see
Yes.
if they can spot a pattern and they'll say so. Cool. But again, I think it's just so ripe for abuse, and I've seen ripe abuse. Like ripe
Yeah.
is a good word for it. Smelt ripe. And it was flagrant. And it was, you know what? And it worked. It worked because what's the business owner going to do? It's cheaper to give up the $40 than it is to lose several thousand.
Yeah, very true. So it is good they're at least putting a notification when people see the reviews and they'll know that they're bad reviews, even if they don't take care of necessarily
Okay.
removing them all.
Well, so business owners, there's hope for you yet. Google overlords, yo, come on. I mean, that's
Come
getting cool and stuff, but come on.
on.
You made the monster. Make a better
Oh,
niche.
and we have to end on one note. We totally forgot to open with it. Audience key.
I was gonna do that. I was gonna say so on the way out, but
Were
yes,
we? Okay,
love to
yeah.
audience key. We need to get Tom on.
Yes, we do. Audience Key is a great tool that takes the place of like four or five other tools that you use for mapping your keywords to content, monitoring them, watching them, knowing when things change. And then also, if you have a Shopify site or a site that can use edge technology, like Shopify doesn't have categories for products, you can actually put those categories into your URLs and create those URLs on the edge using Shopify. And it's a very inexpensive product for everything that it does.
So
Check it
cool.
out. Make Tom happy. He's
Audience
awesome.
key, yeah, again, audienceKey.com. Check it out. Use the free trial. You will be going back to the product later.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, Christine, that's it. We have gone full clock and then some. So special thanks to our sponsors, Audience Key, and also to Ricky and to Brasco, to Darren and Brandy, and to everyone who's listening. We were named number three. Third, I don't know if it's third best or third most important or third most significant or third most listened to or
One of
third
those.
something, but we
Probably
were number
not.
three by Search Engine Journal, and we are amazingly grateful for that.
We're number three. Awesome.
And that's actually because of the people listening, so thank you all. On behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You've been listening to Webcology. recorded live to podcast at WMR on the 11th of July, 2024. Be well, rank well, be kind to each other. We'll talk to you next week.
Hi, everybody. Stay cool.